Okay, welcome back from break. I'd like to introduce our afternoon speakers, Brian Watring and Pablos 2.0 of the Shmoo Group, presenting Osiris.
Hey, I guess this is off. This one's off. So if you're not aware, Osiris is a host-based intrusion detection tool. You've probably heard of things like Tripwire before. The idea is to watch for change on a host. Osiris is specifically designed to make it possible and practical to watch for change on a large deployment of hosts. So if you've got something more than just a machine, you've got dozens of machines or hundreds of machines or whatever, and you want to see activity on them, Osiris is meant to be a management tool for watching them all. So we're at about version 3. Some people still running version 2 because version 3 is still kind of adding new features. But Osiris is very mature software. And Brian here is the primary coder on it. And we're going to try and walk you through what it does, show you how it works. It's really easy to use and install. We like to say that usually application comes after presentation, but in this case, we've done the application already, and the presentation is coming later. So these are, I don't know how to work this. But anyway, those are URLs for shit that you can get, where you can get Osiris, and you can get information about Osiris or whatever. But anyway, okay, so first thing we want to show, and we don't have a lot of slides, but this is the architecture of Osiris. It's very clear. Everything runs through this management console, and that's kind of the machine you trust the most that's going to be storing the databases for all the activity on your machines. And I'm going to let Brian talk about all the detail of how Osiris works, but one thing I really wanted to point out that we put some effort into was using SSL between the components. And since you guys are all working, or a lot of you guys are working on other projects, open source projects, we wanted to talk about how we use SSL to manage trust between these components, because a lot of people don't do that. This is something that could be applicable to the CVS type tools that were presented yesterday, to the network file system that was shown earlier today. The same sort of thing can be done to manage trust between these machines using SSL, using OpenSSL as we do, which is free, cross-platform, and written by other folks who are hanging around here. So in management console, you have a machine that is going to be omniscient. It's going to know all about your machines that are out there. These scan agents you can think of as workstations or other servers that you're monitoring. And the CLI is just the interface to the management console, and we're working on like web interfaces and things as well. But the management console is the thing that has the databases for the scans of the machine. So what happens when you use Osiris is you're going to have these scan agents loaded. You know, this is a daemon that runs on your workstation, and of course, you know, what happens is you want to load code on my machine and let other machines connect to it. And if you look at monitoring systems like Nagios or NetSane or things like that, a lot of times you just have this wide open client running on this machine that doles out information to whoever asks, like, you know, how much disk space you have left and how much the processor utilization is and what users are logged in, all this kind of crap. So, of course, you want to secure all that. And what we're saying is that it's practical to do that using OpenSSL. So I'm just going to walk you through how we establish trust. When you install a scan agent on a client, the first thing you do is you run it once, and it comes up, and it's in this very promiscuous mode. It's sitting there waiting to be seeded with a root cert, right? The first thing that connects to it gets to plant its root cert in. And what happens is the management console, so you install the scan agent on a client, the management console then connects to it and loads the root cert. From then on, that scan agent will only take connections from management consoles that have certs signed by that root cert. Of course, you can, you know, take the workstation offline and preload it with a cert with, you know, in the most secure fashion possible if you're totally paranoid. That's great. But the point of this is to say that we install the software, then we load a root cert, and after that, it only trusts machines coming from using a normal SSL browser-style connection. It only trusts machines that have certs from that root. So that's where the management console, that's how the scan agent trusts the management console. After that, whenever you want to perform a scan, the management console is configured to do these sorts of things and has, you know, timing configurations for when it's going to go out and tell scan agents to run their scans. The management console will connect to the scan agent and tell it whatever it wants it to do. The scan agent authenticates the management console using the SSL mechanism. The management console loads the scan agent with a unique key. So you can just think of it, 128-bit nonce or something. So there's a key that's stored in the scan agent. It keeps it there using in RAM. It doesn't store it on disk. Keeps it in RAM, and all future connections from the management console, it uses that key to authenticate itself to the management console. This way I know if the scan agent has ever been supplanted, I know because that key's not there anymore or it's changed. So what we're trying to say here is that we're doing the best that is possible without hardware key storage, right? Because most of these are random Windows machines. They don't have any secure mechanism for storing keys. So we try to do the best that is possible. It is not possible to make a machine that is totally secure against any kind of attack without hardware key storage in this model. So we're saying we're doing the best that is possible. So you can emulate this model, and you're certainly welcome to ask more about it. But moving on to the bulk of what is crucial about OSIRIS, I'm going to turn it over to Brian, who's going to describe all the features of OSIRIS.
Actually, I'm going to start with a little bit of background information about the project so you guys can better appreciate what we're doing and what we've done up to this point and what we're going to do in the future. Sorry about that. Is that better? Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of background information so you can better appreciate where we are now and the demo that we're going to do. I'd actually like to take a lot of time to do the demo because we can explain all this stuff and it's great, but it actually helps a lot to see an interaction with it. And basically, this whole how this works and how it's set up is really very simple, and it's pretty obvious what we're doing. I mean, we're basically taking snapshots of machines and storing them in a single location and then comparing them periodically. It's actually pretty simple, so I'd like to spend a lot of time on the demo. So OSIRIS originally started basically out of the desire to build a better tripwire, an academic version of tripwire, and people had done that before, and that goal dissolved fairly quickly because it's not rocket science. Tripwire is somewhat cumbersome to use, and we did that in two ways. The first way was to make the configuration very simple. I'll show you later a scan config syntax. It's very intuitive. You can look at it and you know exactly what's being scanned. The second way was to reduce noise. That was probably that's the biggest problem with academic version of Tripwire and the clones and various other apps like it is it's essentially cumbersome to deal with once you're installing, making legitimate changes to the systems. So we did that, and then we soon realized that if you're going through the process of installing these agents on all these hosts and actually configuring this, why not monitor more than just files? There's a lot of other things to monitor. And that's where we are now. We're constantly adding new things. I mean, we monitor user and group databases, kernel modules and extensions that are loaded, and so there's a lot more and to monitoring. Right now, we're working on adding the ability to monitor open ports. That's a big one, especially for Windows machines. So we run on Windows, Linux, BSDs, including Mac OS X, all of the NT-based Windows, I should say. That is somewhat unique with respect to a lot of the other products out there. As far as similarities, the only other product that's somewhat similar to this is a product called Samhain. And I like to call what this is a host integrity monitoring system. That is, it is not simply a file integrity checker. You can get those still, but it does more than that. And so that's where we are now. We're monitoring more than files. Where we're going in the future is we basically want to take all of these changes that we're collecting and have some sort of a brain on top of it that can sort them out, recognize software updates, and organize the deltas in a better fashion rather than just getting lots of... I mean, you can filter them out, but there needs to be more brains behind it. So that's where we're going in the future. So, let me run through how these work real quick, and then let's interact with this thing. The scan agents are very thin, lightweight. It's a service on Windows. They're daemons. They're relatively ignorant in the sense that only thing they know how to do is scan. And so they receive a scan config from the management console, and they scan, they pipe all of the data back. Nothing's ever stored on the host except for the root cert, which, you know, can be pre-provisioned. And so both the executable and the cert can be stored on read-only media if you would like. So that's basically how this guy works. It literally just pipes the data back. It's everything else is controlled by the management console. The scan agents on Unix run with privilege separation or an implementation of it. So let's see. The CLI is also, like Pablo said, it deals with SSL sort of like a browser and connects to the management console, never to the agents themselves. The management console is responsible for storing all of the configs, logs, databases, and basically responsible for scheduling, notifications, and all kinds of logging. So let's see. Now, this is not an ideal situation, but for purposes of this demo, we'll run everything on this local machine here, running macOS 10. More often than not, you'd have three boxes involved, but we're only going to involve one, and it doesn't really matter. You can still see how everything works. Is that big enough font? Okay. So first I'm going to walk you through, I've already added a host, a local host to scan, and so what I'll do is I'll create a trusted database, then make some changes, then show how changes are detected and what you can do, the steps you can do to approve those changes. So I'll log in first. So there's an online help that actually is kept fairly current, mostly because if we do it that way, we don't have to deal with docs as much. But we do that as well. But this is kept fairly current. There's basic commands. You can look at that. You can look at the SSL statistics, cert, fingerprint, and your cipher list. So we have one host, local host. We've now changed into a sub-command mode for this host. All commands that you issue now are applied to that host when it makes sense. So this is the details for this host, and these are basically amount to questions that you're asked when you configure and add a host. The first thing you would generally do once you establish a management console and initialize it is configure it. That would be the first thing, and I'll walk through that and show you the config so you can, just to make sure that mail will work and this demo won't fail miserably. So this is the management host config, basic logging, port information. So it looks like everything's set fine. It'll send mail to the local Brian account, and that's what we want for this demo. The allow list at the bottom, you can have any number of allow. By default, it allows only connections from the local host. You can add more. You can add star if you want. It's up to you. It really depends on your deployment. So we're going to initialize this host. It detects what version it's running and realizes that it has a default scan config for this host. So we'll use that. The defaults are actually fairly reasonable. They scan most libraries and executables, and they generally execute fast. You can the periodic snapshots can be very frequent. If you want, you can send this thing off, you know, like a virus scanner and eat your disk if you want, but the defaults are generally pretty good.
So the default scan config is designed to watch the stuff that on a, that given OS is crucial, so it will watch Etsy and SBIN and things like that.
Okay, so we're going to start this. Now I can watch it so I can get more or less real-time status information, and this shouldn't take too long. Log intensity is, there's three levels at this point, and there's things that are considered critical that if it's set to low, it's a poor choice of words. I mean, basically you have low, medium, high. Low means very, yeah, essentially you're not going to get very, very much log messages. However, if it's a critical event and it's it'll still get logged. As you get medium, more and more verbose, and then high is, you know, troubleshooting. If you're monitoring a lot of hosts, you probably don't want to keep it on high just because it's kind of cumbersome to look through. So we've scanned this host. If we list the databases, we see one. That's, and the star means it's our trusted database. Now we can look at this host and see that it is indeed idle now. It has still resident in memory, the config, so I can just type scan again and it will do it. So something to note here is if I type config, it remembers that I used the, it looks at the trusted database and knows what config was used. So subsequent scans, when the scheduler determines that it's time to scan this host, it figures out what the config was used to create the trusted database, pushes that config, then starts the scan. So I can show you what the database looks like. And so we're in a different subcommand mode for this database. We can look at the header, and that's basically shows you some basic statistics about the scan. Only took a few seconds, it looks like. You have a little over almost 1,000 files scanned. So we can look at, we can list all the records. I won't do that, but I can show you the system records. And these are basically anything that's not a file. So we have users, groups, and in this case, kernel extensions. And I can list details for a specific file. So this is basically everything that was scanned for binls. So now let's make some change. And to do that, I will just basically install the system again. And we'll only see a few files changed, and it'll be obvious which ones they are. Okay, so now we've installed something, and I will scan local again. I'm doing this all by hand. The scheduler would do this, but obviously for the purpose of the demo, we can walk through all this fairly quickly. Okay, so it just finished. So now we should have another database. And if we see our logs, we have one log. We can view it here. And we'll see basically what was installed, list of executables with some statistics. So now this, the notification system is set to mail the local account. So what we can do is, I'm not going to show you in a pretty mailer because I didn't want to go through all the steps to set that up, but it'll be obvious how this will work. So the email contains exactly what was in the log, as well as, if enabled, there's for just to make this very simple to use, we have a URL. So if we follow this, it'll actually log into the management console the same way we would with the CLI. And because the transport and the contents of the mail really can't be trusted. They're not signed or anything, and also for cases where you have a time delay between receiving the mail and going to the management console, when you log in, you're actually presented with the changes, and this is the actual list you should trust and look at. The contents of the mail is mostly just to tell you that you should probably log in and look. So essentially, it sees that this database that was just created is different. I accept it. The management console goes through the process of updating that and acknowledging those changes, and you can go on with life. And if you were using a nice spiffy mailer, you could just click, 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 peck your way through this process. So,
is it clear to everybody what just happened? So made one snapshot of the machine, compared it with the second one, saw the changes which are emailed to you, and you get to verify it in the browser if you want.
Okay. I actually would like to show you a scan config, because I think that's one of the more attractive features and unique aspects of this system. I will look at some default configs. That makes the most sense. So we'll look at the one actually that we just used. And as you can see, there's at the top, the first four, a global set of rules. Everything else is organized into blocks, most of them directory blocks, because they're related to files. There is a system block, and it's pretty obvious what's going on here. You can either include or not these three items. These are the only three that we support right now. As far as the other blocks, if nothing is specified in them, it uses the default. So the default is to not be recursive as far as the directory is concerned, scanning. The links, following symbolic links, by default, it does not. The default rule is to include every file and to use MD5. So if you look at the first one, we're not going to do a recursive scan, and there's one rule to include that file, and that's it. So that's the only file that gets scanned in that directory. Let's see. The next block, private var root, it is a recursive scan. Basically, it's going to scan the entire root directory and everything underneath and look for executables, SUID files. There's a number of filters that we can use, and I can show you those in a little bit. But that's basically a scan config, and it's very intuitive. And the nice thing about it is if you've used other systems before like this, you can appreciate it because there's a lot of symbols that you might have to look up every time. And if you're not updating these configs or changing them, which is ideal, you really don't want to be. You kind of want to just set this thing in motion and then just leave it and don't be bothered. And not be bothered by it. Then when you have to go in and change something, you don't have to look it up, and it's pretty nice. So as far as filters go, which are specified in the rules, we have an obscene amount, mostly just because we could. And so as you can see, that most of those are pretty obvious what they do. You can look for specific types of files, executables, everything, you know, from sticky bits to PGP files, PGP keys. You can filter over users, groups, by ID, by name, Perl files, yeah, all of that stuff. So is it used? I don't know, but it, like I said, it was little effort to do, and there's obviously a few that are going to be used primarily. So, is there anything else that you wanted to add? Did you want to talk about the data pushback? How as far as session key with the agent?
Let's see if people ask about that. Okay. So I think we should take questions and make sure that it's clear to everyone. I mean, what we're saying is OSIRIS is really mature, it's useful, and ready for you guys to play with and steal ideas from. So we'll go ahead and take questions, though. I'd really be interested. If you don't feel like you understand, please ask so we can explain.
And we can also we can interact with this more, too, if someone has a specific thing they want to see it do.
We're going to show installing something.
Could you show a syslog entry?
Oh, yeah, yeah, logs. That's a good point. Sure. So the log messages that you'll see in syslog are actually going to be the same that you saw in the mail. I don't know where they would be. Okay. So they follow this same thing, the same sort of format that you saw in the mail, where the host is specified. There's a few different types of messages, like there's an info, there's a warning, there's an error. Those are mostly related to the daemon. As far as actual deltas are concerned, those are going to be CMP log entries. And we did this just, we thought this would be an easy way to parse them. There's probably standards that we could adhere to make it even easier. I'm sure I can get beat up for that. But in any case, it shows the host, it's a compare log, it shows the path, shows the attribute, and then it shows the before, separated by a comma, and then the after. That's the basic format of a log message.
So how exactly do I see if a file changed? So it's that's an M time entry, so the modification time changed?
Correct. If the very last part of the log entry shows what it was before, and the second part of the very, very last item shows what it is now.
Questions?
So this is just doing file scanning, as you said. It doesn't have any integrated features for doing host health monitoring like something like Nagios or any other monitoring system. This would be something you'd maybe run along. If you're monitoring a large number of hosts, both for health and integrity, you'd run this alongside a yes. traditional monitoring system?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd like to see, we haven't done it, but we'd like to see it. OSIRIS integrated with Nagios so that you could see the results of your OSIRIS scans within Nagios also. And that's totally practical to do, just hasn't been done yet. But we aren't trying to replicate the functionality of like Nagios.
What are you doing for a feedback loop with existing NIDs?
Nothing at this point.
Do you guys have plans to do that?
No. Our to-do list is enormous. We actually have a lot of priorities that I would probably put before that.
Yeah, plus a network IDS is kind of a, you're watching something totally different. It's not really directly related to the way to the host integrity itself. So we see them as, they're similar concepts, but two different things.
You mentioned verifying the identity of the server. How do you verify the identity of the clients to prevent attackers from injecting false messages?
You want to take that one?
Well, you have, so the idea is to, the server, so the management console connects to the client and tells it to run a scan. At that point, what you want to know is that you've connected to the real client, right? And it's got to run a scan and then feedback the same, it's got to feedback A, the key so that we loaded onto the client that's in RAM on the client. Yeah, if you take over the entire client, it would be totally plausible, if you really knew what you were doing, to forge results to the management console. There's no way we can stop that in software. So we do the best we can, as I said earlier, which is that we verify the key so that you can't forge results from a client unless you totally take over that client and you can read memory. Oh, no, yeah, that client wouldn't have the key from the management console.
Right, but how would then you distinguish between attacking clients and clients that just
included? Oh, you can't. You have to go check it out. You wouldn't know over the network. You'd have to wonder why it was rebooted.
Yeah, there's a log message specific for that.
Secondly, yeah. Plus, once you ran the scan, you would see that it was like drastically different because you had a totally different client. And there's no way for the phony client to know what it should be handing back to the management console. So you can tell that something's happened unless the person has taken over the client. So
it was actually pointed out at one point that it would be nice to be able to turn that on and off. Basically, if a machine is rebooted and it's a legitimate sequence of events, it doesn't matter. You're going to have to go and step in there and manually kick things again because you want, you know, as a feature, you'd want to know that, and you're not going to be talking to it anymore. You'll just get bombarded with, hey, you need to kick this thing again. But right now, it doesn't do that. It would be nice to actually have it be configurable.
My question is have you thought about adding support for something other than for cryptography forms other than SSL, not necessarily for the communications that you already encrypt with SSL, but for like signing email messages and things?
Yeah. You want to take it?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, we could sign the messages with PGP or SMIME or something so you didn't have to go into the browser. But ultimately, we want to, the browser is a handy minimalist UI so you can get response from the user. So it's this model works for us. If you wanted to encrypt and send the messages, it would be really easy to get OSIRIS to do that with whatever you want.
And not only that, I mean, if you wanted to develop more ideal situations for protecting that data, don't send it out in mail. You know, keep it on the logs, monitor it. Don't allow remote connections via the CLI. Only, you know, lock the box down and keep it physically secure and log in through the machine itself.
The management console could be if you were, again, really paranoid, could be a laptop that's offline all the time. You plug it in, fire it up, send scan commands out to machines, wait for the results, go offline, and then assess them. So,
right.
Again, I'd say those are usage patterns that are plausible but are outside the scope of features required for OSIRIS to do that. You could do those things today. There's an on switch on there. You got to push up.
Is the agent program running in user space? And have you thought about doing
yes.
a kernel?
There's a form of privilege separation that has been implemented where essentially a user and a group are created upon installation of the agent, and the bulk of the agent runs as a process, as the OSIRIS user process. It's a dummy user that's set up with no shell and login, all that kind of stuff. And it all of the work is done as that user. There is a root run process that proxies requests for opening files that obviously that user can't open.
I guess my concern was more that if someone rootkits the box and is intercepting system calls, and then the whole MD5s, you know, will match up to the original one, even though the binaries are modified.
Say that again.
Like, let's say you break into the box,
right?
You hook the system calls for open, and then when you're doing an MD5 hash of the files, it's going to come back as it was before, even though the files are modified. Have you considered doing like a kernel mods for different systems?
Right. At that point, if you're successful enough to forge the data that's supposed to be coming back in a periodic fashion, that's one thing. But if someone already has the ability to do that on that box, it's game over for that box anyway. And so, there you go.
Sadly, again, we'd love to be able to do something about that, but we can't. It's beyond this. It's not. No IDS tool could do that.
Do you guys have the capability to push out commands to be executed by the agents?
No, not at all. They're fairly ignorant in the sense that they just receive configs and run them and pipe the data back, and that's it.
A couple of people have asked, can you handle this attack? Can you handle that attack? And you've probably thought a lot about what sort of attacks you can and can't handle. Can you give any insights into what's your biggest concerns there?
With respect to the scan agents?
I guess so that the management console thinks that the host is fine, but in fact it's not fine. It's being compromised.
Well, you know, if you're taking over a box, the situation is that, you know, you have to be lead enough to know everything that's being monitored on that box. So if you're really sophisticated and you know it's running OSIRIS and you know you have to fool OSIRIS and you figured out how to do that, then, yeah, you can own the box. You know, the situation is, again, security being sort of a war of escalation, what we want to do is be monitoring machines to the best of our ability. That's where OSIRIS comes in. And, you know, we can see, hopefully, that you've been rootkitted and let you know or know that something's going fishy on the box. But if there's, you know, there's, again, being Turing machines that and all the code being in RAM, if your kernel gives you access to the RAM to rewrite in real time, then, you know, we can't control that.
To add to that, there's other things that you would obviously be doing to monitor these hosts. So if you have logging set up and you've done it well and you're actually analyzing these logs, you know, that's excellent. Adding something like OSIRIS to monitor it is yet another hurdle for someone who's going to root the box to jump over, and that's even better that you're running something like that. It's a different perspective.
As far as what we've tried to do in the architecture of OSIRIS is, A, make sure that we're not the problem. The scan agent is as small as possible. It's as lightweight as possible. You guys can go read the scan agent code yourself. Again, it's all open source. And figure out if you think that this is something that's going to be more of a liability than protection. Right. And you know, we're claiming, of course, that we think it's helpful.
And we have time for two more questions.
Is this available for OpenBSD users?
Yes, it is. The platforms that we support completely and test on routinely are OpenBSD, FreeBSD, Solaris, Windows NT 2000 XP, and Mac OS X, and Linux.
Have people emailed you with like success stories of stuff they've detected, et cetera?
Success stories have actually mostly been deployment, ease of deployment, and just being appreciative of the tool itself. No one's actually sent me mail saying, oh, wow, I just got completely whacked and I figured it out pretty quick. But, you know,
check me on this thought here. Would it be easy to use OSIRIS to set up sort of a web of trust between a bunch of independent servers monitoring each other? So you and your friends all get together, share a bunch of certs, and you all check each other's scan agents in case anyone gets hacked, rather than, you know, the single management console with, you know, N agents, but almost like a one-to-one ratio
right.
for N different sites.
The short answer to that is yes. There's no way, there's nothing in the docs and in the files that say if you're going to deploy this, here's how you would do that. But you could do that.
Basically, what it would look like is you just have multiple management consoles. The only limitation there is that scan agents can only hold one root cert. So each of those management consoles would have to be issued certs from the same CA. So you create a CA, issue certs for each of your friends that they would run on their management console and then allow connection. So you could do that.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thanks.